This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
7-month-old Emmanuel Haro. We're going to talk about that. He's gone. Prosecutors say his father, Jake Haro, killed him. And what makes this case so devastating is that it should never have been possible. Just 2 years ago, Jake was convicted of shattering the bones of another infant, a fractured skull, spinal damage, multiple broken bones. Oh, that was his daughter. Yet instead of prison, a judge gave him probation, you know, like you do. "I'm giving you a second chance," the judge said. That chance meant Jake went home free to father more children because he just couldn't stop. And now we're looking at a tragedy that feels less like an isolated crime and more like the inevitable result of a system that put rehabilitation ahead of protection. Emmanuel's death isn't just about one man's violence. It's about courts that minimize risk, probation, that didn't safeguard children, and red flags that went completely unanswered. To help us understand this, how this happens, and why it keeps happening, joined by psychotherapist Siobhan Scott. We're going to take a look at the psychology of abusers today, the psychology of partners who stay, and the psychology of a system that continues to undermine all the danger, all through the lens of a child who never should have been left vulnerable. Siobhan's latest book, Nightbird, this is her memoir, very much worth checking out. Also, The Minds of Mass Killers, available wherever books are sold. Siobhan, welcome as always to the the program.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, you too. This has been such a troubling case from the beginning, because you look at this and you go, okay, come on. There's 1,000 ways this could have been stopped. This judge here could have stepped in, could have said, hey, you know, the buck stops with me. I'm the judge. But no, he put him back out there. But the information that the judge was basing that decision on, the judge is not out there examining each one of these cases, going into these homes like the CPS workers kind of do. And I don't want to say do, I want to say kind of do, not because they don't want to, but because they don't have the resources to do their jobs effectively. So you get such half-assed reports and half-assed recollections of are these people safe? Are they not? I guess I want to go back even before the judge with you. How does something like this get to where it goes, especially when you heard this case, when you tie it way back to its genesis? Where did it go, Siobhan?
It's really hard to believe that we do such a poor job of taking care of kids in this country. But really, when we look back at the history of the country, we do a crappy job now. We've always done a crappy job. In the 1800s up into the early 1900s, we didn't even have laws that said parents could not harm their children. One of the first cases of a child abuse case that was brought to court in the U.S. was in 1874, and it was brought under an animal abuse law because there was no child abuse law to get a child taken away from the biological parents.
So animals had more rights at first than children.
Animals were protected under law with specific things you could not do to harm animals, but we didn't have laws about kids because it was just assumed that parents always mean well and parents will have the best interest of their kids in mind. And why do we need to worry about it? So have we made some progress? We've made some, but we still don't really do a very good job. We don't require that judges in family court have any specialized training in child abuse, in child psychology, in understanding addiction dynamics and you know, the kinds of things that result in such bad outcomes. Now, there are states that are trying to implement some rules about this to have judges better trained, but it's very piecemeal and fragmented. And for the most part, you have people that have maybe worked in the legal profession for decades and have a lot of experience with criminal cases, but that's not what we're talking about when we're talking about issues involving child safety.
It's shocking that, I mean, all of this, at the end of the day, it's all about mental health for the most part, because if you had mentally healthy people, they wouldn't be killing their kids. They wouldn't be abusing their kids. These things wouldn't be going on. Yet we don't put any sort of weight onto the people who are out there patrolling this sort of stuff. Police don't have any sort of training, for the most part, in any sort of mental health understandings of any of the things that they walk into every single day. It's up to them if they want to study up on that. Other than that, it's just up to them to be, you know, good, right individuals that are making the best judgment calls they can based on the knowledge that they have. And no judges having any sort of insight in this. And at the end of the day, it's all based on that. So we're entrusting people to make these life-changing decisions, but going, oh, are you remotely qualified? Do you have any experience in doing this? No. Oh, go make the choices. It's like, hey, we want you to go be the pastry chef, but we know you have an aversion to flour and have never baked a thing in your life. Go, please be the pastry chef. I'm sure you'll be wonderful at it.
Yeah, yeah. And 50% of child fatalities, there's about 2,000 a year every year. We seem to be pretty consistent about that in the whole country. And 50% of the time, the family had prior CPS involvement from the time that the child was killed. So we're just not doing a very good job. And I think courts like to have concrete evidence. They like to say, well, here was a plan. We ordered, you know, addiction counseling. We ordered parenting classes. We ordered this and that. And here's the boxes checked off that this person did all those things. So here's our nice and concrete evidence. And they're confusing compliance with actual change. And people may jump through hoops and look like they're doing the right thing when in fact they're not integrating any of it.
And that's the thing. It goes back to the assumptions. We assumed parents were going to, you know, not kill their children. So we have laws for animals. Obviously, that's a bad assumption to make. We assume that same thing today, that people are going to make the right decisions, that they go into these programs and, okay, well, they sat there, they did this required parenting class. Now they must be a great parent because they sat and checked the box because, well, they were going to go back to jail if they didn't. These are not ways of truly rehabilitating anyone or training anyone into a way of healthy thinking. There's no parent that abused the hell out of their children that's going to take a class on the weekend. That's going to come out of that going, ah, my ways are changed. It was a bad idea to beat the hell out of my kid. It's either there or it's not. And if you're, I mean, go ahead, Siobhan.
Just true for parenting classes, true for anger management classes. Yeah. It's people who are, let's just say, really malformed in their personalities. They've got a lot of problems. There's so much wrong. It's not a matter of just not having the cognitive information on what you're supposed to do when your baby cries. Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of that. It's a matter of, do they have the capacity to regulate their own internal mood state, to have insight, to, you know, in essence, take care of another living human being? Is it's the biggest responsibility any of us would ever have. And this idea that we can just give them this little educational course and it's this lack of information that makes them a bad parent and now it's all going to be fine. It doesn't work for domestic violence cases and it doesn't work for parenting.
Why do we keep assuming that everybody has capacity to do things? Right. I hate that. I mean, does it go back to just the way we look at like everyone and how we've looked at children for the last many a years? Like, you can do anything you want. No, you can't.
Yeah.
You really can't. You can do what you're qualified to do. You can do as much as your brain allows you to take on. You cannot be anything you want. You cannot do anything you want. Sorry to burst the bubble, but that's just the reality. There are bounds within each one of us of what we're capable of doing. It's not saying we can't do great things within those bounds, but not everyone is capable of everything. And unfortunately, some people, the bar is just that low. They are not capable. They're barely capable of taking care of themselves if you look at their track record, like that of these two yahoos. And yet, it's like, well, they reproduced. He stuck his penis in her, and then goo came out, and a baby showed up. That must magically make them suddenly able to be really responsible parents. Let's just give them the benefit of the doubt and hope everything goes well. We assume that everyone has these capacities when they don't. Can we ever go maybe back to a time where we would look at folks to a certain extent and go, you don't have the capacity to do this? You don't. Yeah. And we're not going to allow you to destroy another life or screw someone up so bad that once you're dead, because you ended up killing yourself or hurting yourself or maiming yourself or getting yourself arrested, and now this person is just out there to repeat the cycle because they know no better. That seems to be how we function.
Yeah, I think you hit it perfectly with the understanding that this positive thinking, right? This America is a country built on positive thinking. You can do anything. Recreate yourself. And I mean, we all like to believe those things. Mm-hmm. But I remember one of the best classes early on in my grad school coursework, the teacher said, number one, I want you to thoroughly assess your client's capacity for change. And I remember writing that down and going, wow, the capacity, what really can this person do? And what are the realistic limits that they came into the world with here? And I think that's something that the US doesn't do a very good job of understanding, that you can't just give everybody information and a pep talk and accept that they're going to go out and be transformed. It's positive thinking, right? But it really only takes you so far. And there are people who shouldn't be raising puppies.
Yeah, Stacey.
100% true. What I notice is a lot of people live their lives by memes. And while memes are fun, that doesn't make you a good parent, a good partner, a good employee. You have to do the work. You have to go through the process. You have to become something. You can't just post something on your refrigerator and go, I'm good. And I feel like that's what we're turning into. You know, we spend time scrolling through TikTok and we see a 2-minute video on something and think, okay, well, I got that mastered. No, we don't. Mm-hmm. No, it's in everyday life. It's in real life that you actually have to do these things and practice them and try to be better every single day. It's just exhausting. Sorry, that was a little commentary on my part.
There's a difference between positive thinking, or is there? And it probably depends on the society we're talking about. But I think in America, we have a very big crossover, and we sometimes don't recognize the difference between the two. But they are very different. Positive thinking and magical thinking.
Yes.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
At McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playmcd.com for full details and amoe.playmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.